The Holy Gospel for the second Sunday of Lent is recorded in Mark, the 8th chapter. Then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, and he said, "Get behind me, Satan. You're setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. And for those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life, giving return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The word of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. So, a story, probably not for real, but you know, all stories are true in some way or another, but this one maybe happened or didn't happen, but it's been told about Billy Graham, the great evangelist who died this past week at age 99. What an amazing guy. But he was a college student in a philosophy class with a philosophy professor who was called himself an evangelical atheist. And at the beginning of this class session one day, he set out to convince his class that God did not exist. So he said, "Okay, if God really exists, let's see what happens." And he says, "God, if you really exist, I want you to come down here and shove me off this platform right now. I'll give you 15 minutes to respond." So he stood there waiting, and the class was silent, you know, and he just stood there kind of smugly, and then 10 minutes into his 15-minute wait, he said again, "God, I'm still here, I'm waiting, where are you?" And about a minute before his 15 minutes were up, Billy Graham came up onto the platform, and he went up to the professor, and he smacked him in the face and knocked him off the platform and knocked him out cold. And then he went back down to his seat in the auditorium. And the professor eventually, you know, he came to, and he looked at Billy and said, "What are you doing? Why on earth did you do that?" And Billy said, "Well, God was busy, so God used me." Well, you know what? There's a lot of laughter going on in our Old Testament reading today. And in the Bible, there's more laughter than sometimes we catch on to. There's a lot of humor in this thing, and we need some humor, I think. But there's a thing that's just as absurd as the Billy Graham story going on here, and more so. When God tells Abram that he's going to have a child at age 99, you know, he falls on his face laughing. It's so funny. He can't believe this thing. And then a little while later, you hear that they come back again, these messengers of God, to tell Abram again, so he tries to get it. And 90-year-old Sarah is listening behind the tent door, you know, and she hears them say that she's going to have a child, and she starts laughing. And the men say to her, as the angel said to Mary, remember, the mother of Jesus, "Is anything too difficult for God?" And that kind of shut her up for a while. And then God gets the last laugh. Huh? 9 months later, they give birth to a bouncing baby boy. I don't know how many of you 90-year-olds want to have a baby. You know, my mother-in-law is in town. She's 93. She's loved spending time with her great-grandbaby, but I'm sure she didn't want to take little May home with her at age one. So, but that's what they're doing. They're raising a little bouncing baby boy, and they name him Isaac, which means laughter. Laughter. Like I said, we could probably do with a little more humor in our faith life after all. Again, is anything impossible for God? Is anything impossible for God? But we are the joke sometimes, aren't we? Because we don't get that. You know, it took God three times of issuing this covenant to Abraham and Sarah before they finally got it, you know? And in fact, you know, the first time he said this, and I love this passage. He says in chapter 12, I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you, make your name great. You will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. That was the first time that this covenant with Abraham and Sarah was shared. Then in chapter 15, it goes on again, and he says this, count the stars in the heavens. That's how many ancestors you're going to have, how many children you're going to have in the world. And that's, and is anything impossible for God? Well, you know, after a couple of these promises, it didn't seem like things were panning out so well. So Abraham and Sarah, decided they needed to take things into their own hands, right? I mean, after all, when you're in your 80s, you know, time's marching on, right? You got to do something. So they do the thing that's kind of traditional in that culture. If a woman couldn't get pregnant, you had the maid get pregnant instead, and then you claimed her baby as your own. So that's what happens, and Hagar gives birth to Ishmael. And we know how that turns out. There's jealousy and backbiting and sarcasm in that relationship until finally poor Hagar and her 13-year-old son Ishmael are kicked out of the house. So much for us kind of taking God's place and agenda, huh? So, even though they failed to trust God in this, God, the ever-faithful God, even when they're not faithful to them, comes again and makes the covenant promise more clearly. You will have a child. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because in contrast to this covenant with Noah that we heard last week, where God just makes a promise, in this one, they're brought even deeper into this relationship with God. There's a claiming by God. It's marked by a change of names. Avram, the honored father, his name meant, Avram becomes Abraham, the father of many nations, right? And Sarai becomes Sarah, princess, royal woman. But I want you to note something that kind of had escaped me when I was, until this week, when I was studying this, I was asking myself, what's the big deal? What's in these names, anyway, that makes this so significant? And here it came to me. Right in the middle of Abram's name was added, Ah. Can you say that? Ah. Right. In the middle of Sarai's name, the same thing, Ah. And it's the same sound that's in the name for God, the holy name for God, Yahweh. You hear that? God put the sound of his very self in the middle of their identities. Isn't that something? Right in the middle of who they were, God placed God's self. Ah. The one who breathes life into all existence. Ah. And you know, it's interesting, when someone's dying, if you've been there at the deathbed, oftentimes as they're dying, the only sound you hear is, ah, the breath of God, the breath of God, without which there is no life. And that's what Abraham and Sarah have right in the middle of them. They are so claimed by God that God puts his very name right in the middle of their names. Wow. And then to top it off, and not just that, but there's this physical symbol too, circumcision. We skipped those verses in here. Somebody didn't want to have them read, I guess, in church or something. But it's a visible mark that we are claimed by God. That's how the Israelites understood this. And that was done for all generations, right? So, and on we go to this thing of the breath of God that gives life. Right at the heart of the center of their lives and their names. The same challenge was someone that Peter faced in our gospel reading for today. Whoops. Excuse me. Peter was facing this issue as well. He was struggling because He's trying to hear what God is promising in Jesus, because Jesus says he's going to fulfill God's covenant for once and for all now, one final covenant with humanity, by, Jesus says, by being betrayed by those closest to him, right? Going through great suffering, being rejected by the very leaders of religion, and being killed, and 3 days rise again. That is God's way of creating one final, new, unconditional covenant with all humanity. That God so desires a relationship with us that he's willing to sacrifice himself in the flesh, in his son Jesus, to bridge the gap that we've created by our difficulty trusting God, by our running off and taking things into our own hands like Abraham and Sarah did. And when we leave God out of our life, the very life that he created in the first place. Remember, Yahweh, the breath of God that alone gives life, and we forget that very fact. And when we try to leave God out of our commitments, our decisions, our relationships, out of life, as for Abraham and Sarah, things always get screwed up, don't they? That's what we're seeing across our American society and across this whole world. What happens in relationships between human beings when they try to leave God out? When they forget God, the God of all creation, the God who is the divine and loving energy of the entire universe, the love that is the heart of all life, and therefore also at the heart of every human relationship, we forget it. And look what happens. But we hear God's promise, we doubt it like Peter did, you know? And like Abraham and Sarah did, because it doesn't seem to fit our plans or how we think things ought to be. But God always has the last laugh, doesn't he? By the way, in some churches, the first Sunday after Easter is called Joke Sunday. And all they do is tell jokes they take turns telling jokes during the sermon, because it's like God, in the resurrection of Christ, has the last laugh over death, sin, and the devil. And that's pretty cool, the last laugh. Well, this is the God in Jesus Christ who never gives up on us, never lets go, even in our greatest denials, even when we take things too much into our own hands, he never lets go of us. He comes to redeem and restore all the broken relationships in our lives and in the world around us. And that's going on as we speak. He's using us and others to reconcile broken relationships and bring wholeness back to where it's been lost. He comes regardless of our foibles, and he reminds us of this. You know, I have called you by name. You are mine. In your baptism, I called you, and daily I call you. My name is in the middle of your name, whatever your name is, child of God. I have called you. You are mine. And over time, as we follow Jesus through our lives, the more deeply aware we become of this intimate, intimate relationship with him. That God is present in Jesus in the very air we breathe. Every breath comes from him. From the first to the last. Even when we forget it. And that we're dependent on him for everything. Including making things right when we forget and screw up and things go wrong. And then he calls us, as he did those first disciples who had all betrayed and denied and ran away from him and abandoned him. Jesus rises from the dead and calls us again and again, even when we've broken the promise ourselves. He keeps his, calls us to be agents of this loving breath of life wherever we go. And you know what? That sets us apart. Just like the mark of changed names and circumcision changed Abraham and Sarah and set them apart, we washed in the waters of baptism are marked with the cross of Christ, right? We do this all the time, set apart as disciples to be something different than the rest of the world. And here's a neat poster that it kind of says it to me. You're not called to be cool. You're not called to be popular. You're not called to fit in. You're not called to be the MVP. You're not called to be the prom queen, the valedictorian, or the class president. You are called to be different. You're called to make a difference. And more we hear our name, Gary, child of God, throughout our lives, as we listen to Scripture and listen to the Word, and as we are fed by the very body and blood of Christ at this table, and more we do that, the more deeply we get immersed in this new covenant, this intimate relationship with God, and the more we want to simply say, along with Abraham and Sarah, along with Peter and all the disciples of the risen Christ, God, you're so busy, use me.